It's not a cartoon. It's anime.
Yes. Welcome to another episode of Animation. Squad is back in this. You know what it is. Myself, Brennan, Ice, Rob. We are out here.
What's up?
You know, we do out here. We do one-offs. We do debates. We talk our ish about this anime game. So we do out here. Season 2, Brennan's pick, Iron-Blooded Orphans.
Sugunin Iron-Blooded Orphans, we out here.
Let me tell you something, bro. Just real quick, man. This shit is depressing, bro. This shit. Wow, man. I was watching this last night and I was just like, I'm sad.
I think that was the intention. I think that's what they wanted.
Well, and that's why, yeah, that'll get into what I talk about. I feel like this definitely I'm not a Gundam guy at all, but I might have to look out some more Gundams. You know, maybe yeah. I would say
the only other Gundam that I've watched and enjoyed is Gundam 00. I've seen probably like 5 or 6 Gundam, but most of them for me, I couldn't get into.
You watched five or six Gundams.
Yeah, but Gundam 00 is the one that I'm just like, this one, it was a little more complicated than this one, which says a lot, but I love the premise and the backdrop of that anime. Like the world that they built there, I was like, yo, this is some real shit. So I enjoyed that one. I like this one more, to be honest, but I did like that one. I would say it's worth watching.
All right.
If you're not watching on YouTube, always watch us on YouTube too. I know y'all like to watch, like just listen to us on Spotify or
at least Apple watch iTunes. The power ups.
Watch the power ups for that. But right now, like today, specifically today too, Rob's background is
yes, it is. Rob, don't even say what it is.
I'm not going to say
what to watch. Rob's background is the most appropriate background for what we're about to talk about today.
And he made it himself.
I felt inspired this morning. I had some time waiting for, we were recording a little bit later today. I was like, what am I going to do to kill some time? I'm going to make this background because this dude felt this in his soul.
Yes, he did. Good
he
Lord.
He felt every little
today
bit of
I
this.
Got time. That's what
I would say. Only thing I'll say is that you could have put 2 people in that picture. That's all I'll say.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Yeah.
Actually, do you mind if I talk about my thing super quick?
Yeah.
So I have something that I want to talk about in detail in another episode, but I'm just going to bring it up now because it just got brought to my attention by Maya Osborne. She sent me a link earlier today that's talking about Russia. And if we have any listeners that live in Russia, have lived in Russia, or have any experience in Russia, I would like for you to DM me because I want to know more. But what I do know is that Russia courts are banning anime by name and by streaming websites right now. And they've been doing it for a while. There's a history of this shit. Titles like Inuyasha and Death Note. Like, it feels like the court is like, has the Death Note book for anime right now. And it's like writing the names of these different anime. And they're like, oh, it's too violent. The kids are going to be violent, which is so ironic and hilarious to me in so many ways, but also horrible considering that I'm such a big anime fan and so is everybody else here. And for people not to be able to watch it, I think it's tragic. I think censorship of like open media that's not actually offensive or bad to people, which I don't believe anime is by any stretch of the imagination, for the most part, 99% of it's fine. I think that that's a real tragedy and I'd like to learn more. I'm going to do some more research and I just wanted to bring that up because I think that's some bullshit. That's it.
Yeah.
Anybody at Brennan the Best on Instagram, slide in my DMs. I look at my requests. Please let me know if you know more than I do, which is easy to know more. But specifically, if you are living in Russia, I want to hear from you and hear what your experience is with anime.
And what I'm more concerned about is what are they playing? If anime's so bad, what does the rest of their programming look like to the point where anime is just atrocious enough to
we
be
might
banned?
Do a special. And that's a good question, Ice. And to the point where like I want someone to reach out because there is a possibility, not a promise, that we might do, however it's going to be a specialty episode where we could talk to somebody who's living there so we can learn more about that experience because we're all things anime here. Yeah. And if people in our community are being censored, then we want to be able to do whatever we can to be a voice of reason and bring attention to that. So fuck that noise. I'm here
we
for
we might
it.
Have
Get
to pull a Dennis Rodman and pull up in Russia like fucking he did in North Korea.
You go ahead and travel during the pandemic, fam. You got that.
And you think Dennis Rodman make it back. So
so yeah, that concludes my segment. But please, once again, at Brennan the Best on Instagram. Slide in my DMs if you are in Russia or are associated with what's going on there. Please let me know. Thank you.
Also, shout out to Maya Osborne. Maya, you know, she's in Tahir's Wording is Hard. She said Brennan. Yeah. So that's who that was. If you guys be like, well, who was that? Yeah, she always looks out.
Her Instagram is at Maya Paints, M-A-Y-E Paints.
And she has a YouTube also, so follow her YouTube, Maya Osborne.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah, Maya's awesome.
Yeah.
So let's get into it. Rob, you want to lead us off with this recap?
Episodes.
Five through ten?
I think Rob's going to enjoy this recap.
31 through 35, I mean, if we're going technically full count, but full count, six through ten here on season two. But we come back in as Takaki is leading Tekadon forces in their joint war against the Arbrass soldiers that, you know, they were training. And they're going up against the SAU, which I believe is America in this particular timeline. Yeah. Anyway, tensions are escalating quickly and have kind of turned into a stalemate back and forth battle that doesn't, they don't really realize they're being puppet mastered by Rustal and his agent Galen, who I've got behind me, who's pretending to be the leader of the Arbrow forces, in an effort to weaken McGillis or even better, you know, kill him. Aston, though, is back in his mobile suit and is falling back to his human debris ways, fighting and killing mercilessly with no concern for his own survival. McGillis's team is, you know, just telling them that this all seems strange, and McGillis agrees. He's like, they're there to act as like impartial judges to arbitrate the conflict, but he realizes this stalemate seems to be purposeful and someone is pulling the strings on both sides. Some of the Tekadon soldiers ask Takaki, you know, what's going on? Even they can tell something is off, but Takaki tells them, like, you know, Galen says we're winning, and Radis says that, you know, Orga's happy, you know, with all of us, you know, both of which are lies. But Aston is more to the point. He tells him, shut up, do your job, rest when you can. That's it. Alone, Takaki confides in Aston, you know, he has his own suspicions. And when a Tekadon soldier arrives with, like, movement orders from Captain Galen, Takaki loses it, realizing he's just completely lost control here of his men and is in way in over his head. Elsewhere, Rustal and his team talk about the war on Earth and how it plays to their advantage. The longer McGillis and Tekadon are tied up in this conflict, the weaker they become. And it's all thanks to Galen. Also in space, on their way to Earth, Orga and the Mars branch of Tekadon are in the dark about what's happening on Earth. The only way they're getting updates is from the news. And, you know, they're still ways away from landing. Orga is confident that the people he left, you know, behind to do their job there are going to handle it, though he doesn't know Chad is currently in a coma healing. And when some of the new recruits start to get anxious about, like, hey, we should be doing more, you know, to prepare, Mikazuki and Eugene are telling him the best thing you can do right now is rest, because when you get to Earth, there's not gonna be any time for that. On the battlefield, Takaki is nearly killed, but Galen in his own mobile suit intervenes, saving him and basically trying to deepen Tekadon's loyalty to him as he continues the manipulation. Finally, though, Tekadon has arrived in Earth's orbit, but they're confused when the Arbrow control tower is like, you can't land here and provide backup. Like, we're not going to let you come down. Nobody's allowed in. And it turns out to be... the work of Radis. And when he updates Galen that things are going well, we see just how little he really cares about Tekadon, referring to them as dogs that he's trained. The next morning, though, Galen gets a report. McGillis has joined the battle in his own mobile suit, and he calls all the Arbrow and Tekadon forces to move in and kill him. So Takaki and Aston jump in their mobile suits and roll out, hoping to end this conflict once and for all. On the battlefield, McGillis hasn't lost a step, just slaying Arbrow mobile suits left and right. But Galen, Takaki, and Aston have spotted him, and they plan their attack out. And when they move in, McGillis instantly recognizes that Tekadon tactics and, like, the AVS system. And he's like, hey, who are these orders coming from? Is this from Orga or from someone else? And it's enough to give Takaki, like, a moment's pause. But Aston's just like, hey, that's the enemy. Do not listen to him. And Takaki just goes in and attacks instead. But, you know, this is war. McGillis has to defend himself against attack. And when he sees an opening on Takaki, he severs his suit's arm, takes his weapon. But Aston pushes Takaki out of the way, and he and his suit are impaled instead. But he's too tough to die that way, uses the last of his strength to hold McGillis in place, to be finished off. And it's only the timely arrival of Mikazuki that saves his life. Galen, surprised to see, you know, them on Earth, immediately bails, and Mikazuki wants to follow, but, you know, hearing Takaki call out to Aston on the radio makes him stop, realizing what's happened. Takaki begs for Aston to hang on, but the damage is just too much. And as he dies, he says he wishes he hadn't met Takaki or his sister Fuka, because he showed them how good life can really be, and now he doesn't want to lose it. back on Earth, you know, on the Earth base, Raditz is surrounded by Akihiro and Eugene, who tell them that, like, we know you sold us out and we will deal with you when the time comes. But first, we need to take care of Galen, and trying to finish, you know, trying to win them over. He's like, hey, I got info on this guy. I got all his hiding places. Like, maybe you can check here, 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 and here.
Howard.
Oh, my God. Sure enough, they track him down to one of them, and when he hears Tekadon is coming, Galen scrambles his men and then runs off on his own, just leaving them for dead. He's like, I'll get a new team. But Akihiro isn't letting him go that easy, and the two start to brawl. Elsewhere in the fight, Hush is in his first mobile suit battle, and he sucks. There's just no way around it. Mikazuki saves him a moment before he gets killed and tells him, like, just stay out of the way. And Hush realizes...
You can't have a dope-ass name like Hush and be trash like that.
He's trash, and, no, and he's like, mad I'm bad. Shit.
Like, yo, exactly. I need a suit out here because I'm gonna be. This is good, Mikazuki, man.
Yo, he got shut that your was the. Ass up. Tell me that wasn't one of the most outside of like getting KO'd. Tell me that wasn't like one of the most un-ass whooping, humbling moments we've ever seen in anime, where he's just sitting there, just like.
He froze like Eminem as B-Rabbit in his movie.
Eight Mile.
Just sat froze like dog.
Yeah, he was about to get killed just because he froze in fear. And he was like, he was straight up just like, I'm going to be better than you. I'm going to be stronger than you. You ain't shit, Mika. And Mika had to save his life and said, don't get in my way. And he was just like, okay, big dick energy.
Spaghetti.
Big dick energy.
That should be his theme song too. Palm is sweaty.
Sweaty.
Every time he's ready to go out there
again. back with Akihiro, he quickly overpowers Galen, who rightfully guesses that Akihiro is fighting to avenge his family. And he tries to use some underhanded tricks to catch Akihiro off guard, warning him, like, hey, you seem like a decent guy, and decent people are always the first to die. But Akihiro turns the tables on him, crushing Galen's suit.
You seem real decent to me.
Crushes that dude.
Remember that wrestler? What was his name? Was his name The Crush? I forgot his name. He used to crush your head. That was his finishing move.
Never watched WWF.
Yeah. I watched wrestling. I don't know that guy.
He would crush your head like this, and that was like his people's elbow or whatever. But it was years ago. It was before The Rock and them.
Gotcha. But Galen he's got one last trick up his sleeve and self-destructs, but the explosion isn't strong enough to damage the Gundam frame, which Naze's wife, Laughter, is real happy to see, considering she has a growing crush on Akihiro.
She dick so bad. Like, man. Bruh.
Fuck all that, Brennan. The fact that you be like, well, I'm about to self-destruct, and it does no damage.
That's worse than
the same as Vegeta shit, because Vegeta blew up Majin Buu and did nothing to him. But like, Majin Buu was just like, cool, I'm right back. Like,
but at least he blew up and it was like some, like, oh, maybe he, like, there was no, like, he didn't blow back nothing. He didn't fall back. He just turned around and was like, what the fuck was
I'm good.
Going? Like, check this out.
Vegeta's broke. He thought he did something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, I'm just saying, I just like to point out that Rob texted me after he watched that episode. What did you text me, Rob?
I said Akihiro's the fucking man. That dude handled his business.
I love what he did. Yeah. How he pulled up. He was just like, fuck this noise. You're dying. Like, it was dope. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just like when you hear your little brother get or somebody get beat up, like, who did it? All right, him. All right, bet. Like,
serve him.
Later, the Mars crew tries to figure out, you know, just what trouble Raditz got them into. Ultimately, they decide Takaki should make the final choice of what to do with him. And they leave, Mikazuki handing him a gun. And Raditz tries to say everything he did was to protect Tekadon. But Takaki's mind is made up and betrayal can't be forgiven. So he shoots him dead. Once again. Meanwhile,
I love that moment of this show when all the rest of the leaders of Tekadon turned their backs and said, this is his decision because we believe in him as a man, and he's going to handle this shit. However he chooses is what we support. That to me means so much. I felt that shit from my core. It's like, when you just turn and walk away, I don't give a fuck what happens because I trust my teammate. Yo, that's it right
but
there.
But Mika
that's,
was with the shit because he was sitting there. He's like, man, what are we even talking to them for? Like, Mika, what are we talking?
Exactly, like, I love
like,
that.
What are we talking to him for?
Why
man?
Are we? What are words right now happening? What is this shit? Like, he literally just like, why are we talking? And pulled out a gun.
That was cold blooded. I almost put that as my background of him in that spot right there.
Excuse me.
What are we even talking to him for? Like, I was like, all right, bro, you got it.
One of the coldest. Like, there was so many cold lines in this anime in that episode.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you seem real decent.
Congratulations on being decent. Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, Hush is complaining to his friend Dane that, you know, he sees just how much talent he lacks. And it's not just the AVS system that would make the difference. Like, he's completely lacking. But Dane surprises him, saying, you know, hey, being able to judge yourself accurately and your lack of skill means you're developing skills at a pilot. That's some real silver lining shit right there. On the other part of the base, McGillis is explaining to Mikazuki, you know, that they lost a lot of info on Galen when he blew up his suit. That's apparently where he had stored all his info, his files and all that. But now they can't link him to Ristal. But since, you know, he still thanks Mikazuki, you know, telling him his fighting reminded him of this legendary guy, Agnika Kairu, who's the founder of Galahorn. And as the credits roll, we see each side kind of reacting to their losses. Julieta is devastated to learn about Galen's death, but Ristal reminds her, you know, that that was a life that dude chose to lead, and they should honor him by not mourning. And Takaki, meanwhile, returns home to Fuka, and, you know, they hug as she realizes why Aston isn't there with him. We flash forward a month later at a meeting. You know, we've got all the heads of Galahorn there. Eok is trying to say that, you know, there's no proof that Galen even existed and the whole war should be blamed on McGillis. Others start worrying that they, you know, we're lacking the strength to extend their influence to Mars. And afterwards, McGillis and Ristal talk to each other and recounting old times when McGillis was first adopted by his dad. And at first, Ristal, you know, had written him off as some just like illegitimate child. But when he went to talk with McGillis, he was surprised to see, you know, his maturity, and says that McGillis continues to surprise him even now, even in how well he, you know, deposed his father. And McGillis is like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about there. He's playing dumb. But both men know that their Cold War for power is, you know, reaching a boiling point.
Cold War.
Cold War. Good yeah, choice.
That was amazing. That was dope.
I mean, I don't know if you can call it a Cold War because it also was hot.
Yeah, because they got active.
But they're like, they got active. It's like, but it's like they're not in direct conflict, you know? Right. It's like
it feels more like guerrilla warfare than Cold War, but it's both. I think it's like a guerrilla Cold War, is what I would say.
Elsewhere on Earth, though, Kudalia catches up with Makanai, you know, letting him know what happened since the attack. You know, the war is over. Orga is working to make peace between the warring factions. Tekadon is going to leave Earth. And as with everyone else, he's impressed with Tekadon, you know, starts talking about, you know, ensuring the safety of the future. And with that, he asks Kudalia basically to stay on Earth so he can teach her what he knows. And she thinks about that. But at the Tekadon base, people are still grieving Aston. You know, Chad has returned to work after healing, but feels guilt for all those that died under his watch. And Akihiro talks with laughter about, like, you know, he wished he had done more to get to know his brother's former comrade, Aston, before he died. Takaki, too, is still dealing with his guilt that, you know.
But they're not actually related, right, though? They're not actual brothers.
No.
Yeah.
He was saying, like... He was his real brother's like co-pilot, brother that died in season one. Right. And they all ended up taking their last name once they joined Tekadon. He and Aston were not technically related. Takaki is still dealing with his guilt as he's helping Orga make sense of all the paperwork that Radis had left behind. But Mikazuki reassures him, you know, everything you did was what you could expected to have done. You thought those orders were, you know, coming from Orga, and so you followed them. And then when you knew what happened and it was your turn to right the situation, you killed that dude. What more could we have asked you to do? Kudalia is a bit softer with her advice, saying, you know, he's basically trying too hard to be like Mikazuki and the rest when they're like, there are other ways to look at things and other paths to take in life. In space, Julieta wants revenge for Galen. He taught her everything she knows, apparently. But the masked man tells her that, you know, thinking she alone could have saved Galen's life and changed the course of the war dishonors his memory. And and then he talks about a soldier he once knew that, like her, fought for the honor of a superior that helped him, basically referring to Ayn in season one. And when she asks where that soldier is now, he just says, very close to me. So some ominous lines there. On Earth, McGillis meets with Orga and presents him with a major offer. Help him defeat Ristal, and he will give him full governing power of Mars. He'll just hand that over to Tekadon, basically making them part of Galahorn. And talking this over with his team later, Orga tells him he wants to accept the offer. But Kudalia seems suspicious, and Miss Marabit points out, like, they'll need to clear that with their bosses at Taiwaz. Everybody else is on board, but Takaki uses this moment to announce that he's going to leave Tekadon to give a better life to his sister. In their own way, everybody kind of tells him, you know, they respect the decision, and Orga tells him, you know, you can go, you know, thank you. I'm going to set you up with a job on Earth.
I fucking love Orga, man. I fucking love Orga. He's like, how benevolent is that? Like, yo, we're all risking our lives for our dream that you said you were on, but I'll honor my word and say you're here by choice. You're going to leave. I thank you and I help you. Like, that's some real shit.
Because most places like that, especially gangs that or groups or fractions that come up like that, it's either it's only one way in, one way out.
Yep.
So, you know, for him to do that was really dope.
Yeah. Kudelia also checks back in with Mac and I, lets him know that, you know, I'm not staying. I'm going back to Mars. I'm returning with Tekadon. I have to see this through, which he accepts. And on the ship, Orga and Mikazuki talk about, you know, they're still reaching for what's next and, you know, they're still getting closer to their goal, but it's much further away than they thought. On Mars, Mikazuki hangs out at the farm, hoping to spend more time there before heading back to base. He sends Hush back to train because he needs it. Not having given up on him yet. But in space, Rustal activates the masked man, who we learn his name is, and I'm not sure if this was, different in the sub or the dub, but in the sub version, it's Vidar. And it tells him, you know, basically, you know, we need you to help put down some armed rebellions that have been going on since Gjallarhorn lost power. And he is very happy to help. At Tekadon, they are taking in the three mobile suits that the Earth branch had used now that, you know, they've closed down. And their new pilots are going to be Chad, Dante, and Derma, people who all kind of had close ties to Aston in one way or another. Basically, Derma was another one of Aston's old crewmates when they were human debris. Shino also eyes the Gundam that they dug up and wants to be the next pilot for that, but they basically need to get outfitted by the turbines. So for now, they just fix up ones that they have and, you know, train new soldiers. Meanwhile, Chad and Hush are sparring each other, and Hush is starting to get a little bit better, hold his own. And in the equipment area, Maribit is talking with Nadi, the old man, the boss there, and tells him, you know, she's worried about all these new Gundam frames showing up, meaning this could be trouble for Tekadon, you know, bad sign. But he's like, don't worry, now that we have all this equipment, all these weapons, nobody's gonna mess with us. The turbines are starting work on this new Gundam, which they find out the name is Floros. But Tekadon sent them something else that they had dug up as some kind of mobile suit accessory that doesn't show up in their data banks and doesn't look like it needs a pilot. At Taiwaz, Naze is kind of giving their council, the boss, you know, update about Orga's offer from Gjallarhorn to take over control of Mars. And surprisingly, the boss is relatively cool with it, thinking about all the money they can kind of make. But the others, mostly his lieutenant, Jazly, has a big problem with it, saying Tekadon is way out of line and making them look bad by making these agreements without even consulting them.
He just don't fuck with Naze.
No, not at all. Yeah. But Naze, he promises, hey, like, if things don't work out, I will apologize with my own life. However, after the meeting, it's clear that Naze and Jazly, they don't get along, like Ice was saying. And when Naze talks with Orga later, he warns him, like, you're causing a lot of trouble here. And, like, basically gives him the line, like, this is the last time I forgive you with a smile. And I'm warning you now, I will never betray Taiwaz. Like, if it comes down to, like, you and Taiwaz and the boss, I'm going with the boss. Back at the Tekadon base, the famous thruple that we all know and love eat lunch again and talk about how they all hope to go live on the farm together once the fighting is done. All while Hush annoys Mikazuki by trying to do too much to serve him, playing fourth wheel or something. Soon, Chad comes in asking why Nadi doesn't smell anymore, and he's surprised to learn that it's because he and Maribit are dating, which Chad seems sorry to learn. So, sorry, Chad.
He don't stink anymore, dog.
What's up with that?
It definitely happens.
I mean,
Keenan
used to stink. He don't stink no more.
First of all, motherfucker, that is not true.
I said Keenan used to talk about it all the time.
I couldn't get over it because how excited Keenan got to say, look, that's exactly what happens, guys. Like, yeah,
we know,
Keenan. We know.
We're not talking about smell, you dickhead. We're talking about in general. Normally, when you meet a girl, you gotta step your game up.
That's
literally one of my questions later on. So go fuck yourself.
You did get excited though. But I knew why Keenan got excited.
I did too. The food was hanging too low. He's like, look at guys, look how I smell. Look,
I ran into it. I eat that. I ran into it.
He did. In Mars orbit, Isurugi sets Org up with like all these, you know, appear for Tekadon ships in space and, you know, a full schedule of meetings with important people he'll need to know and have good relationships with when he's in charge of Mars. He's not looking forward to it, but knows it's important to the final mission. somewhere else in space, Vidar finally gets let off the leash, and we see his considerable skill in a mobile suit as he's just absolutely destroying an entire brigade of rebels in their own mobile suits. And Julieta is just like awestruck by what this dude can do. And on Earth, McGillis has a very creepy scene with his child bride where he talks about all he aspires to be
cringeworthy.
It's a lot. It was like one of those things where I'm just like, oh, I forgot about this whole thing.
I did. That's exactly what happened to me. I was like, who the fuck? I was like, oh, no. But I was like, okay, he'll be, you know, he won't interact with her like that. Nah, my man went Magic City. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, my God.
I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah, he basically,
I think everybody's least favorite part is solidified.
Easily.
But yeah, he just basically says he's going to use his power to rewrite, you know, Gallahor and make things right. That was his inspiration when he was an abused child. And, you know, hey, I'm going to make this whole world great. And then people will love you even though you are my 10-year-old fiance. And she seems happy. So, okay.
Sick.
She seems younger than 10, too, which makes it even worse. But go on.
It's a lot. We come back to Jazly, who has his men spying on Orga and his dealings with Gjallarhorn. He mentions that he too has connections with Gjallarhorn, and if the boss won't take Tekka down a few pegs, then I'll do it myself. Meanwhile, the turbine mechanics are working on the new Gundam frame, still trying to figure out what this pilotless vehicle is, and all they can figure out that it's from the Calamity War, which gives them the idea to like, hey, why don't we ask Gjallarhorn about it since they basically are on our side now and they know all kinds of things about the Calamity War. Orga, though, is trying to find a balance between sending orders to Tekka Don on Mars and continuing with all this meet and greet stuff with important people. You know, he's being pulled in a lot of different directions, but he soon gets a call from McGillis about this mysterious piece of equipment. And he tells Orga, hey, this is just a small piece of something larger called mobile armor, which is basically pilotless tech that was at the center of this Calamity War. And the big thing that they found at the site is probably the main body. And he's like, you know, these things killed hundreds of millions of people, destroyed cities. Do not dig that up. And actually, matter of fact, I'm on my way. Like, just stay right there. Unfortunately, Jazly's spy also pick up on this info, and he sends it right to Rustal's team. And they seem surprised that this is still around. They were all supposed to be destroyed. And they worry that McGillis might be on his way to destroy it and use that to basically gain points that'll get him more leadership within Gjallarhorn and change the way that, you know, the rankings are all decided in their hierarchy. And outraged, Ajax is like, you know, we have to intervene immediately. And Rustal says that, you know, I'm going to remember Jazly's name. This dude hooked us up. Back with the mechanics, Yamagi gets the info about how dangerous the mobile armor is and tries to warn them, but he's too late. They turn that stuff on, and the lead mechanic is like, all of these weapons start to just like click into, you know, formation. The red eye goes on, and it seems like it's going to be bad news. Meanwhile, Mikazuki, Atra, and Hush go up to pay Kudelia a visit at her office in Admos, and they're happy to see her proudly displaying pictures of the orphanage, the farm amongst their many, you know, projects. And we see that she's been like managing money for Mikazuki and a lot of the other soldiers. And Hush asks if, you know, she can help him too. And later she kind of privately worries about how little education these kids still have and wonder if she's really working towards the peaceful end that they're all hoping for, if she's just like kind of keeping the cycle going. Later, Mikazuki and several others are all on guard duty for Orga as he's meeting up with McGillis to show off this mobile armor to him. And they take only just a few mobile workers, you know, no mobile suits. And Tekka Don is kind of worried about it, but McGillis is like, honestly, it's for the best. These mobile suits were made to fight against the mobile armor, and bringing a suit around may just like wake it up. That's part of what makes these things so dangerous. It works with like an AI that kills without direction or discretion. It sees mobile suits, it turns on, and it fucks them up. That's what they do. But unfortunately, as they arrive at the site, it's the exact same time when Ajax shows up with a brigade of mobile suits ready to take McGillis into custody for rebellion. And even though McGillis, you know, does want to take power, he's like, this isn't what my plan was. Like, I can see this looks bad. But, you know, Ajax isn't buying it. Orga tries to, you know, put in a call back to base that they need reinforcements. But the line is busy.
Fucking dumb.
They're on a call with the turbines, who just finally managed to put down that mobile armor that they had turned on, but not without sustaining significant damage and injuries. And they warn that, hey, these things are dangerous. No kidding. And they're about to find out firsthand. Like,
do not pass go.
Yeah.
Not collect $200.
As McGillis is telling Eok to just like stay back, he takes one step too close to the mobile armor suit, which activates and its devastating weapon system just like cuts a giant line out of the earth as it like raises up, and shit's about to get real.
This is what I have been waiting for. But go on. Y'all don't even fucking know. I'm sorry. That's it. I'm so sorry.
I don't know why you're mic
I am so excited right now.
Your mic for some reason keeps like tapping and banging and
that shit twerking like he be doing before we start recording.
Is it better now?
Yeah. That's when you, okay. when you move and stuff like that. Well, thank you, Rob, for the recap as always. Doing an excellent job.
Good job, Rob.
Many thanks. Thank you,
everybody. Yeah, man. It's about to go down. We're into the question portion of the show. First question. Gallen played these kids from Tekken, man. Does he make you a list of most ruthless anime characters? And who do you have on that list, Rob?
You know, this dude, he was definitely the puppet master. And like, even though he was only in there for like an episode and a half, maybe two episodes total, I hated this dude because he was just like, he really did play these kids. And like, just for his like level of, I don't give a fuck about these kids. He would definitely make my list of like ruthless people, but is he at the top? No. For me, my top ruthless anime character would probably have to be Askeladd, because that dude led a whole army of fucking Norse Vikings that he was just basically bringing along to kill for his ultimate revenge plan. The fact that he beheaded that king like in front of the court and everybody, just like, that dude gave zero fucks about anything. He was all about the plan, nothing else. He was ruthless.
I love Askeladd, by the way.
Yeah, I love Askeladd.
Askeladd's great.
I was mad that he actually died, to be honest.
Yeah.
So does Gallant, he makes your list?
He would make my list. He had a big impact in a short amount of time.
Okay. Get in, get out.
Brennan?
I'd like to I agree with Rob, but I don't know if Rob has seen it yet or not. I'm actually going to go with the moms from Promised Neverland. I'm going to say she's the worst out of everybody, because like, giving a quote from Malcolm X, he likened the racism in the South to that of a wolf and the racism in the North to that of a fox. And he said that I prefer the wolf because the wolf, at least you see it snarl and growl its teeth, whereas the fox will bite you on the back of the neck while you sleep. Mm-hmm. And that woman, that mother in Promised Neverland, was the slyest of foxes and treated these children as if she loved them, treated them, hugged them, told them she loved them, kissed them goodnight every night, and all for them to be slaughtered for food. That's not even giving away the show. Like, that's episode one. I don't give a fuck. Like, all I'm saying is like, holy fuck. And that's like, for me, when it comes to like pure evil, that is like, for me, that's like antagonistic evil. Easily close to the top. And then you could pretty much say, you know, Frieza would be a second one because she's racist. It is racist. I'm not going to say she. I'm going to say it is racist as fuck for like, oh, these monkeys blew up a whole planet kind of thing. So, you know, that's pretty fucked up too.
All right. You dropped two in there on us because actually Frieza was in mine. But luckily I had a backup because of fucking Brennan. For me, I would have to go Light Yagami, man. I think.
Yeah, thought about it.
Yeah, he cared about nobody. He was willing to take anybody out to make somebody walk to their death. And she was trying to be nice, man. Like he gave zero fucks. I think if push really came to shove, he would have killed family if he really needed to. This guy, he didn't care. He was one of the most ruthless characters I've seen without having to kill somebody physically with his hands. But it's hard for me to argue the mom too, bro. That's children. You're sending children off to get fucking eaten like dog food, bro. It's just, I don't know why she didn't come to my head, bro. That was a fucking great one, to be honest. But, I got Light Yagami. I don't know if this guy, the reason why this guy might make my list is because he dealt with kids. If kids weren't involved, I probably wouldn't care as much as how ruthless as he was. But the fact that he just sent kids to their death also, it's children. That's what makes it sad. Ice.
Long as Gendo Akari is around, then Shinji's dad, then nobody is more ruthless to him in my eyes. Like,
yeah,
It's all the people that we've been talking about have been just like they've done shitty things that people aren't related to them. Fucking Shinji's dad did that to his son. His son was just like, fuck you. You have no background in this. At least the people that we've been talking about, except the Promise of Neverland kids, they have a background in fighting and war and death and stuff. Mm-hmm. Freaking Shinji was just chilling, minding his own business. And then he pulled him up and was like, I'm going to put you through hell. And that's like, as a, and me, especially me as a father, like, I could never do that to Icy, but I can, like, he's ruthless. That's just the ultimate ruthless, is putting your own child through what he put Shinji through. Nah, he's a top dog.
It was bad, but I feel like,
I don't think it compares to these motherfuckers.
Yeah.
He put his, he put his son in death, in front of death almost every day, on a daily basis.
And a machine that will protect him.
But he was also just like, oh, you're not going to do it? Wheel that girl out that we got, like, one eye patched up. Like, get her in here. Stick her in the suit. Get her out there. Like, he put his wife in a mobile suit.
That's a ruthless interview. I think just the fact that he's doing it to his child is what makes him more ruthless than these other people.
He boned that one woman and then took her daughter, too. That scientist, like, he got both of them. He gave no fucks about anybody.
Yeah, I know, but does that compare to Frieza destroying a whole planet, Ascalon? With like the killing a fucking whole army for his shitty revenge, or
that
the mother
who's
killing
has no blood ties to,
and oh, okay, I'm sorry, and mom who I can't speak to on that actually right now, but there may or might not have been some blood ties to motherfuckers that she's killing.
One,
like, that's all I'm gonna say. You need to watch that shit. That's all I'm gonna say. Mother for me is a winner.
Like, yeah, I might put her at the top over even all the even the person that I said. Okay, so next question. Do you think a kid like Army could really be effective, like as Tekkadon, in today's standards? So, like, if a kid formed an army now, I don't think the kids now are tough enough to fight like that. I think this is how they would be dope, and if they did a war, it would have to be, I guess, like a viral war, like a online type of war. What do they call that? Like a, what do they call
cyber
that?
War or something?
Like a cyber war. If they did a cyber war, this generation would fuck everything up, I think, in that realm. But if they had to go to war and kill people, they don't have it. Hey, because you're being too mean. You can't. Guns, we can't. They're not taking nobody out, bro. They're, even if push came to shove, they're gonna try to find a safer way. They'll do it online. They're gonna slander you online. Well, you know, so and so said this and cancel them. That's how they would do that shit. So I think in a cyber war, yeah, these,
I mean, hippies
good.
were a thing.
You say what?
I say hippies were a thing. So I mean, you had a bunch of soft, I mean, not soft, but like anti-war people back then too that were very, very much flowers.
Yeah, like, so like I said, they're not, yeah, I don't get that point. But anyways, I don't
I'm
know.
Saying the people you're describing are the same, like they had those same type of people back then too.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that I don't know if I think there's more of this generation that's that way than just a select small group of people that are just angry as fuck, and then a small group came from that and was just like, we're not gonna be angry. I think this generation is raised not that way. And that's a whole different ballgame. Brennan?
I think the power of the raising itself determines this. So for me, like you're saying that this generation is weak or whatever, I think that if you're like from birth or just like this is going to be a child soldier versus saying, let me start training you at the age of 18, I'd be more scared of the 15-year-old that knows nothing but war and killing than the 18-year-old who learned how to do it at 18. Because there's a space of dehumanizing that means that, like, you don't have to be stronger physically to kill people, like, because that's what guns are for. You know what I'm saying? Like, just like if you ever watch The Raid, Rob, you can akin pulling a trigger to taking out the trash.
But I think also, too, in that sense, even in this show, that they're, as a child, they're going to probably always want some type of elderly type of love or compassion or even like respect.
I don't know, man. Like, child soldiers are terrifying to me because a lot of times empathy is a taught characteristic that you have to, like, that is normally something you learn, like empathy, compassion, and things like that are taught characters that you learn from the people around you. Sometimes it's natural, but if you don't expose somebody to any kind of those emotions at all, and only thing that they know is killing and war, then it means nothing to them. It means nothing. And that is one of the most terrifying things you can be, is somebody who's ready to kill people and it means nothing to you, or it's fun. Especially if you're raised that way. If it's like not about a physical strength thing and about mental fortitude, and that's all you know, that's the most terrifying motherfuckers you're ever going to meet. Because there's no soul in the anime.
They said it in this episode. They said it's hard to fight somebody that has no sense of dying.
And has like, nothing to lose. And exactly, believe they're supposed to die. These human debris are terrifying in war because they throw themselves at you in a way that a regular motherfucker wouldn't, because like, I have a family back home, or I want to have a family. I have aspirations for other things. I understand the world is bigger than this battlefield. But if you're like, the only thing I have is this motherfucking battlefield, if you are Thorfinn in this motherfucker, you know what I'm saying? Like, that is more terrifying than a mother, like for me at least. I'm like, that shit is terrifying.
That's what Aston said before he died.
We are talking about now in this generation. With these kids.
I get that. I'm saying like, but the thing is, you heard what I started this off with.
Well, of course. In that case, yeah. If you raise anybody to be, yeah, of course.
That's what I'm saying. But you're like, it's a kid's thing. And I'm just like, this generation, like, I think it depends on the kid. Like, I don't think you can just speak to the generalities of like, do they have hands or not? Like, will a kid be able to pull a trigger or not? It's just a fucking trigger. I think it comes down to how they were, like, who raised them. And I don't think the culture raises that type of thing. Like, I don't think our culture teaches empathy. I think our parents do. You know what I'm saying? Or the people you grew up around, not necessarily the culture. So for me, I think it's too individualistic of a question to talk about taking lives or not taking lives. Yeah. You know, just because you played outside versus played indoors, I don't think that changes your level of empathy or scariness when you have a gun in your hand and you're told to kill somebody. So for me, that's what I say. It's a wash.
Yeah. Rob?
Yeah, I mean, can they be as effective as Tekadon? I don't know, because like to speak to both your points, like I think, yeah, if you're talking like you're just going to be pulling from, like if you're going to take some kids out of like a Zoom classroom today and like put a gun in their hand and be like, join the army, like they're not going to be great. But like there's certainly situations in other countries around the world where that is happening. Yeah, like kids are being conscripted into armies, like that's happening. Yeah. And like to Brennan's point, like that's really scary because they are treated like human debris, and that they can be very scary as soldiers. However, I think the most quote unquote unrealistic or least something you could replicate in real life is somebody like Orga, where clearly he was brought up in that system, but he does have a sense of empathy and a sense of leadership that I think a lot of kids that get put through that sort of culture, that you're not going to have that. I think the leadership here is so would they be as effective? No, because I don't think they would have the leadership or the strategic mind to really navigate the complications of war. They would just be like crazy animals if they were going to be anything. Yeah. But I was just going to say, but like, do I think the TikTok generation would be a scary bunch of soldiers? No, not really.
They're not going to be tactical enough at that particular age. They don't know enough even about the fucking world to know what to do and to plan correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the keenest point you was really answering it from an American point of view, because I think there's still, to Rob's point, countries to this day that are militant in everything that they do. There's freaking ballerina teams that are fucking militant in Russia, and cheerleading teams that are militant in everything that they do. There is civil wars going on in West Africa that has child soldiers. And so what you're saying is from a very Americanized standpoint.
What I'm saying is, in general, if Tekadon is taking out fucking other armies, are they taking out is a kid army taking out a grown man army?
If you have, like I said, if you got these fractions in West Africa that are in these civil wars, they're monsters. These kids are monsters, and this is just how they raise. But I think the caveat to this all will be the success part. And I think a lot of these militant groups and these fractions that have these kids that are monsters, they are usually ran by an adult and they're led by an adult. So I think the success of it, I don't think would be to the level of Tekadon, just because I don't think that if they let a kid in charge, to Rob's point, if they let a kid in charge, I don't think they would be as successful. But if they had like an older person leading them, I feel like they'd just
be successful. If they had a bearded gentleman, if you will.
Exactly.
That's what I mean. Maybe I didn't make that clear, but I said a kid army. full on kid army. So
gotcha.
Leader's a kid, everything.
But Orga.
Yeah, Orga's not realistic. Yeah. I think, as I can speak to very much so, like leadership is a, there's definitely natural aspects to it, but there's a lot of learned aspects of being leadership as well. So, you know, you can be a natural leader, but that doesn't mean you're a great, you're a good leader just because you have natural abilities. It takes a lot of experience and mentorship to get to that point.
Yeah, because you can fuck people's lives up.
Yeah, 100% agree with that, with the mentorship. Next question. So it took this guy a long time to get to Earth, about three weeks to get, I mean, yeah, from Mars to Earth. What is the longest trip you ever been on? Ice.
And when I say this, it doesn't necessarily have to be length. It can also be a trip that felt long. And that's my trip. I had a trip to when I was really young, from St. Louis to Louisiana, New Orleans, which not that super. I've been on longer trips as far as distance and time, but just being a kid and being in the fucking, we had like a van. So I was like all the way in the back and it just felt like fucking forever because I'm not driving. And this was like early 90s. So I had like a black and white Game Boy. So like if it's dark, you're fucking done. Like if it's dark, you can't play anything. Yeah. And we left at night, and the majority of the trip was at night. So I was just like, "Fam, like
just sitting there,
just taking
the ride."
These kids, we're gonna sound old saying this, but these kids in this generation would never know a real road trip without anything,
nothing, bro.
Nintendo Switch, iPhone, iPad, change the game.
Nothing. I was like, fam, I got to talk to and my sister was super young at the time. So like, I had to fucking talk to adults right now. Like, get the fuck out of here. Like, I'm trying to beat this fucking Pokemon Red you fuck out of here. Like, that was the longest trip in my life.
Yeah.
Rob?
Yeah, similar to Ice. Yeah. I remember, you know, living in upstate New York, I had family that lived in like Indiana and we drove, and like, that's a long trip. And I just remember like the same thing Ice was saying, like once the sun went down, you were done. You just had to watch stuff go by in the road, or like I would try to wait for like a car to get behind us and like lift the Game Boy up and try to play by like their headlights, you know, try to use the headlights as a lamp or something, but that didn't always work. So yeah, taking those long road trips back, like before, you know, iPhones or whatever, that was, you felt every mile, every mile.
And they started to come up with the Game Boy lights because they knew that was happening.
Happy, yeah,
so they had like the little Game Boy lights to go on top of it. Yeah. Brennan?
I was distracted.
So the question is, what were you watching, about buffering, bro?
Damn.
Whoa.
Buffering Brennan over here.
The longest trip that I've ever been on is, it's a hard question for me to answer. Because Ice actually inspired one thing, is that I was on it as a kid. My family, we went on a road trip that we went from Michigan all the way to like the long northern route all the way across the country to go down the entire California coast all the way back down through Texas and back up to Michigan. And that took us about a month. But I've also traveled around Europe for over a month and a half. And I went to Cambodia and was there for 3 months. And you know, like I've traveled a lot. That's something I do a lot. I'd say the one that felt the longest was probably the trip through Europe, because there was a lot of good in that and bad, because I went to Europe and the Middle East and all of it was work. And so it was just like, you know, like going and just traveling and going through airports and getting harassed by having drones and stuff. It was really intense because I was doing this back in like 2014 and 2015 when drones weren't a known thing back then. And I had one with me and I was crossing international continents, not just borders. And just imagine going to, you know, into the Middle East, into Israel and Jordan with a drone. I went through a lot of shit to get all that out there. So that trip felt like really long. But then on the other side of it, I had a great time in certain areas. Like I was in Berlin, like this is lit, you know, having a good time. I loved Berlin. Did not have good time in Israel just simply because of the security measures that I had to go through. It was insane, like literally whole days of questioning about what I was doing and what my intention was there. I'm like, I have the paperwork. They're like, that's cool, but what about you? You know, I'm just like, oh, wow. Like, let me talk about your family and your generational shit. I'm like, what? What does my family have to do with, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a lot. So that, I would say that was probably my longest trip, was like that Europe and Middle East trip.
I'd say for me, it was a 3-day trip from California, from Los Angeles to North Carolina. And this is right when like 9/11 happened. So I was afraid to take a plane. So I told my dad, I was like, if we got to travel, I'm not taking a plane. We're going to take somewhere else to get there, a train or something. He was like, well, y'all taking a bus. And we took a fucking Greyhound.
God damn.
Los Angeles to North Carolina.
And oh, my God.
Let me tell you something, bro. Like you said, with none of that stuff, like no cell phone, nothing. Bro, the Greyhound is the worst thing you can ever travel on. It sucks ass.
Greyhound sucks.
It's dirty. Yeah. It stinks. The people are stinky. Only thing that came out of there good, not even for me, for my brother, he got a hand job from a random girl. He got so at least
and that's
he
a
got
win.
He got a stanky hand job because it was like day 2.5 on that trip that this girl got on the bus. So, and we didn't get a chance to shower on the Greyhound. There's no shower or something. Mm-hmm. So his balls had to be sticking sitting there on the bus.
I hate to ask. Like, first of all, Keenan's dad is of no help in this situation.
That's what I was about to say.
Just from the stories you told me, Keenan, it feels like your dad would be cheering for this. And the second thing I would say, just logistical question you may not know the answer to, is in that shitty situation, if he got a completed job, as you'd say, you know what? I'm not even going to go there.
Where did he come at?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Like, where did he leave it in his pants? He just sat in it? Like, yo, that was crazy. And just sat in it?
He finished in his sweats.
And just and sat in it for the rest?
Wait, he finished in his sweats. It got on, too graphic, but it got on her hand, and she wiped it on the seat next to her. And I guess she was having issues with the guy that was kind of like sitting, like, I guess, like, I think she was in the middle, he was on the side, and it was another guy on another side. She like wiped it kind of a little bit on him too because she didn't like him because they were having issues on the bus.
Oh my God.
That's right. How old were you?
I regret asking that question. I'm so sorry.
We were thanks for we were like fucking, what, 14, 15, 13, 14, something? What did
I man.
Yo, that young seed.
My junior year, maybe sophomore to junior year.
And right, she was around that age too?
Yeah, or like a year older.
It's a fucking Greyhound.
Did you get a birth certificate?
Yeah, it was just like we were all teenagers. She might have been older. I don't know. She might have been older than both of us, but I know we were teenagers when it happened.
How do you even get to that conversation on the Greyhound with somebody? Like, hey,
she was filling them, and all of a sudden he moved seats next to her, and I wasn't a hater, so I just let it go. I had to sit next to this big old blood. And I think, you know, he might have been doing what he was doing. And I was just like, and then he came back. Hey, just got a hand job. Dude. My balls stink. And that's all I heard. All right, man. Next question.
Oh, my God.
This is a crazy situation, man. And a crazy situation to put a child in. But I think, something that probably had to be done. Would you have wanted to pull the trigger if you were talking?
This question is hard for me because it's not if you were in that situation. I asked the question specifically if you were him. And as you guys know, one of the things that happened in this series is that Mika said that he felt relieved that how do you say his name? Takaki,
I think. Yeah.
That Takaki had gotten out of Tekken because, and I think I personally believe the reason for that is they all knew he had a gentle heart and was a good kid.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that. That's why he wants to take care of his sister. That's why everybody looks out for him. And that's why, you know, big brother Akira was ready to fuck shit up on his behalf.
Right.
And so if you are him in that space, do you want to pull that trigger because your friend just got murdered because of this? And a lot of your friends that you were put in charge of wanted to do that. I mean, honestly, I'm going to say I probably would think that I'll do the exact same thing he did, but it's not going to be an easy choice just like he showed. And I wanted to ask this question just to be able to put it to exemplify how real of a choice he made, two choices he made, one of them stopping Mika from doing it, and the second one in following through with the decision of killing him.
Why are we even talking to him, man?
Yeah. So I think that was a really impactful choice right there that he had to make after a very emotional experience that's going to be a part of who he is through the rest of his life. And I think that it was like they really did a good job of laying out the stakes for that. And that for me hit my heart and my heartstrings. So I'm just like, fuck. Like, would I have made that same choice if I was him? Would I have made that same choice if I was me? I don't know. Shit was real out here. So it was just really crazy to me.
Ice?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to kill him. I'm gonna do it myself. That's pretty much what it is. What your conscious decision making. It's one thing if you're a leader and you just make a bad call and it causes somebody death, but you betrayed me. I'm shooting you off of principle. Even if Ashton would have lived, I still would have shot you. I still would have killed you because the principle of it all. What could have happened, and then what could have happened did happen, and you got to pay for that, and you're gonna pay for it by my hand, and I still might peace out because I want to take care of my sister and I got that heart, but. This is for me. This is for you to know not to fuck with me. But this is also for my techie, the motherfuckers that let them know, like, hey, man, I cherish y'all. Like, I fuck with y'all. Y'all my people. I'm leaving, but don't get shit twisted. Like, I'm still teching until I die.
Yeah. I mean, I have to agree with Ice on that in the sense of, like, yeah, that motherfucker dead. It's not even a question. Like, this, I'm not even hesitant. Yeah. No hesitant in there. Like, because to be honest with you, like, yeah, it's one of those things, like, You were considered the leader of that group somewhat, right? And it's like, I got to do this for y'all to let y'all know that I some of y'all got sacrificed because I made a bad call or whatever the case may be. This dude betrayed. And to be honest with you, this is going to sound fucked up, but I would have let him get all that shit out. I would have let him think he's going to live. Oh, Katie, you're such a great... Oh, man, thank you. Be like, bah, 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 bah. I loaded the whole clip in his ass, and I don't think I would have felt shit for it. My best friend sacrificed himself and killed me because you were a fucking idiot and you wanted to pretty much do what you did to us? Nah. You got to go. I'm not hesitating. I don't know. I know Brenton is saying it's probably harder to deal with. No, I don't think it is. I don't think it's a hard thing at all. He's gone. He's out of here.
Yeah, he's out of here.
Rob?
Yeah. No, I think he had to go. I think he made the right choice. And not even because I can see why, you know, that like, obviously that is something that's probably going to weigh on him that he maybe not... He didn't want to do that, but as a leader, as somebody that was leading them and to know that like that dude put you in that position and cost all those people those lives, I would imagine even if I didn't want to do it, I still would have to do it for them, for exactly. those people that died out there mm-hmm. because of what this guy did. Yep. He's got to go. He probably is going to have to live with that for a long time, but like, I hope he doesn't because he made the right call. I mean, mm-hmm. he's definitely, that's not the only person Takaki's killed, number one, you know, as somebody that's been a soldier. Yeah. Maybe the first time he did it, like, you know, face to face and mm-hmm. and kind of like cold blood, like Mikazuki has no problem doing. But I mean, as somebody that was their leader and was put in charge of the Earth Branch of Tekadon, I think it was his job to bring that to an end, to be like, now you got to go.
Yeah.
I think in general, once you take that leader position, you have to take those type of sacrifices. In my head, from the beginning, once I'm that leader, I'm willing to do those type of things for my guys.
Yeah. It's the Batman Red Hood stuff. Like, fam, gotta kill this dude, man. Like, come on, man.
All right. Next question. So McGillis talked a big game about weeding out the corruption and building a better world. But do you trust him? Do you really think he's working towards a greater good? Rob.
This dude... There was like a solid stretch of the season where I'm like, this guy might be my favorite character. And then there was that scene with his child bride. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. I don't think I can do that. And it was that scene in particular, because like this dude almost like, I don't feel like I can quite call him like an anti-hero. He's almost like an anti-villain where it's like, I feel like he's being set up as like an antagonist in a way. But like, he talks a good game. He talks like, I want to weed out this corruption. I want to make things right. I want to put people like Tekadon and Orga in power. But does he really mean it? He even says at the beginning of this season, like, being where I am, I don't have friends. Like, I can't be thinking like that. And that makes me think that even at the end of the day, as much as he's just like, you know, Tekadon reminds me of all these legends and myths, I'm like, I still think he's looking for out for a number one, that he is the one that can make the call. I do not trust him. I think at the end of the day, he still sees himself as the top dog and will throw anybody under the bus for that.
Brennan.
I disagree a little bit, but I actually agree on a point. As I actually think that McGillis, he kind of has like the mama mentality, is what I would say. And that like whatever it takes to achieve this goal. And like you said, throw people under the bus, you know, fuck a kid, kill a bunch of people. I don't care. Like, he's just like, I don't care. Whatever it takes to get this right.
Fuck a kid could have went two different ways.
Yeah,
I think it's both ways. Like, he's using child soldiers and like possibly fucking a 10-year-old. So I think he's just
you
on.
You can't say Mamba mentality and then go into that in the same fucking breath. You can't
well, I'm
do
just saying,
that.
The reason I say Mamba
you
mentality
can't
is because
do that.
All
I
say
I get
is,
it, but you can't. Come on.
Look, I understand what you're saying too, Ice. I think you're right. I shouldn't have done that, so I take that back. But what I will say, is he's along the lines of like, and he truly means it when he says by any means necessary.
Yeah.
I think that he has not lied about those means and my point of what his intention is. I think he does intend to reform it, even if it costs him anything. Whatever it costs him, he's like, I'm gonna fuck. This shit ain't right. I don't care what it takes. I'm gonna do everything I can to change it into what I believe is correct. Now, does what he believe is a better world? Is it really a just thing he's moving towards? That you know that goes into the whole Thanos argument. But for me, like I think he has been very honest about his intentions with Tekkenon and pretty much everybody else because he's been singing the same tune since day one, and he's been going after it with everything he has since day one. So, like, I do trust him that he's speaking the truth in what he wants to do. I would just want to know more about what does that vision look like for you in that sense. But I do believe that he's like, yo, no, this is what I'm gonna do. This is it. I believe that.
We're gonna have to start. We have to start cutting your answers a little short.
True. But,
go ahead, Ice.
I trust him, but I do foresee a fight between him and Tekkenon just out of his hand being forced. I think something's gonna happen with Ty Wise. In representation of Tekkenon, and they gonna do something crazy to Gjallarhorn's like his part of Gjallarhorn, excuse me, and he's gonna force his hand to fight, and he's gonna have to fight those guys. But I think he's not gonna fight them from a space of betrayal. That's how I look at it. But I do trust him, and I do think his intentions are he's in the right spot.
Yeah, I don't fully trust him. He's a pretty boy. Can't trust him. along with everything else y'all said. That's yeah, pretty much.
On top of all that,
pretty much got a lot of all the meat off it, but yeah, I mean, I don't trust him. Once you got a 10-year-old fiance, you will never be trusted, bro.
Facts.
Your intentions are not good. I don't give a fuck how you go about it. I'm on your side. You're fucking with a child. Next question.
True.
This show has a lot of different fractions with great and terrible names. What is the worst
faction?
He said fractions, but
okay,
that's what I didn't know. I was just like, I don't know if he meant fractions, but what's the worst and cool? What's the worst name? What's the coolest group name in all of anime? I think that was a hard question for me, but you can go ahead. I mean, that's Ice's question. Go ahead.
When I think of like names of people, like a group of people, and so for instance, I'm just giving an example. This is not my pick, but like the spiders in Hunter x Hunter, like that's a group name. Like when I think of names, like when you hear them, does it put fear in your heart? Is it like, oh shit, these dudes are pulling up? Like in a certain groups of people in anime, when you hear it, it's like fuck. And then you know sometimes they live up to it, sometimes they don't. But the worst name for sure to me is Team Rocket. Like I fucking hate that name. I think that's the dumbest shit. And then they double down on the dumb shit when they pull up with their fucking song and dance and choreography shit. Get the fuck out of here and get their ass washed every time. Like Team Rocket, when I hear Team Rocket, that puts no fear in my heart. Team Rocket is coming. I don't give a fuck. Who is that? Like who? I don't care. And then as far as the one that I like of the from Naruto, the Akatsuki, I just think it's just a dope ass name. I just, even before watching Naruto, even before I knew who was in it, how they look, it's just like hearing that, like you automatically hear group's name and you know, like they with the shit. And that's the Akatsuki for me.
Right.
As far as like lame group names, honestly, I'm going to go with the Z Fighters. That name makes no sense in the context of the world. Like, what does Z stand for other than it's in the title of the show? I don't understand how they would have even come to that. Like, name as a group, like, all right, what are we going to call ourselves? The Z Fighters. Like, for what? I don't understand what that means. It means nothing to me. I don't understand what Z means to them. It seems to have zero context other than the turtle symbol kind of looks like a Z. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. So for me, Z Fighters is a big swing and a miss. And as far as cool names, I'm going to go with the Upper Moons. I don't know. Would you like, and they live up to the hype. I'm not going to say anything because obviously there's a lot of spoilers out there for those that haven't read it. But just like the fact that there's lower moons and upper moons and, you know, like, oh, there's the upper moons and one of them are coming. Like it's a thing. It's a fucking thing. It's a cool name and they live up to it.
That was you explaining everything and nothing at the same time while keeping Brennan's poor heart intact.
Keeping it, keeping it level.
The upper moons are fucking good. I don't really have a whack because it's funny. I actually like the Z-Warriors. I actually had it. Like,
explain
I
don't like it. The Z-Warriors. Explain it.
Because the way, there's no explanation. It just sounds dope. So I was going up the sense of like how would, because even Team Rocket sounds dope as hell to me. But to Ivan's point, they pulled up with zero smoke every single time. They were just they were horrible. So they don't match the name. But I don't think Team Rocket to me was necessarily bad. I was thinking of the anime. I was like, shit, do I even, a lot of animes, I feel like they don't have a lot of groups that I can think of. To Ice's point, you said the spiders, but yeah, I guess that falls in line. That falls in line with their, I guess, the group name, the Phantom Troop. That's like the Phantom Troop. That just sounds just hard.
That's what I'm saying. When you hear it, it's like
you like, them motherfuckers about like the Phantom Troop coming. The Phantom Troop? Now I'm thinking in my head like, can we see them? Like how? Like all this different shit. Is it an illusion? Whatever. So, I feel like Brennan's gonna have a good one. I'm like, damn. But I couldn't think of a weak name necessarily of an anime. Brennan?
I don't really have weak ones, but I have two ones that I like. Number one, Tekadon. I think it sounds dope. Personally, just Tekadon. Yeah. I every time I hear it, I'm just like, I'd like to pull up and like, yo, he's with Tekadon. Like, yes, I am. And the second one, I like functionality in names because it helps me remember them and it also helps to identify in the functionality. So I actually like the Red Ribbon Army, because it's like, it's describing who they are. You know who the Red Ribbon Army is. Like, who is that? Like, they're wearing red ribbons, motherfucker. One. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like the red ribbons on the gun should tell you who they are, you know, like, or whatever.
That's real.
So I like that.
Yeah.
The Z, I never really tripped off this. The Z in Dragon Ball Z is for Zenkai. It means Zenkai, which means last time in Japanese, which obviously, because the GT really is super, it wasn't.
He did his best. Like, yo, I'm done with this shit, guys. Z is it. And they're like, that's crazy. Last letter in the alphabet. We should just make it super now. Or GT. Yeah.
There's too much money being made, fam. This shit's never going to end.
He said, this is it. He went Michael Jackson on it.
So next question. What would you want to be a big art? Oh, I'm sorry. Would you want to be a big army? Because, you know, he says if they give you Mars, that's going to expand you guys, but also now that makes you probably a bigger target. People are going to start coming after you. Would you want to be a big army and make yourself a bigger target? Or would you want to stay low-key kind of how they are or to a point to where you can just do your jobs, get in and out, nobody tries to fucking destroy your whole being like that. You can just take jobs here and there and kind of fly under the radar. Me personally, I'm an under the radar type person in a lot of ways, and I've been told I probably need to become bigger in a sense. Like, you need to probably even boast a little bit more. But my natural personality is just not that. So me, I would probably stay low key because I just like we're like you said, they're kids. I don't want to put all these kids in that smoke. You know what I'm saying? You make us a big target now. Now you're putting a bigger target to get more children murdered. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if I could personally, if I'm the leader of that. If I'm Orga, if I can live with myself now, and we're going to see at the end of this goddamn series, I guess, about how many children are going to get murdered under my belt. I just, because these are your brothers, you're saying, so I don't know how I would feel. I will find it on the radar. I'll keep it low-key. Brennan.
I'll take the big army any day, because in a big army, like, say, for example, the U.S. military, like, you can stay away from any form of combat if you want. Like, I'm on the janitorial crew, you know, and it's just like, I clean the bathrooms in the station or whatever. Like, you can literally do anything in a big army, whatever your interest may lie. It's like, I don't have shit to do with motherfuckers dying, and my life does not go to risk. So for me, my current self, I'm going to do everything I can not to be fighting motherfuckers because I'm not a fighter.
No. Maybe the question was a little confusing. I mean, like, would you want to be a big army? Like, so like, maybe I just worded it wrong. Like, would you want your army to be big or would you want your army to be small? Like you.
Like if you're the leader.
If you're the leader, would you want your army to be the big, this huge ass army that now has a huge target that motherfuckers is coming after you? Or you want to be like, yeah, we little small cats. We do little missions here and there. And we eat well, but we ain't out here trying to kill us all the time. That's
what I'm going to pass on this question because I don't think it's a very good question, to be honest, because it's just situational. Like, do you want to be a big army? It's like, no matter what army you are, you're going to have motherfuckers coming for you. And if you have a big army, then you probably have another big army coming for you. If you're a small army, then you might have a big army coming for you or another small army. Like guerrilla warfare, whatever. Warfare is warfare. So there's problems on both sides. There's benefits on both sides. I don't think there's like, it's all situation. It's a very situational question that you didn't provide a situation for. So for me, I don't know how to answer that question without knowing the situation that I'm in. So it depends on the situation would be my answer.
So if you was taking it.
You could have arranged your own situation. I don't understand how hard that was. This thing is made it.
I'm not trying to be a dick. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that's a hard question to answer. What's wrong with not liking yourself. Your question? I'm like,
I'm liking it, but you made it to where like, you couldn't. You made it to where you couldn't like it. Like, I don't understand what's going on. Like,
yeah,
just, like,
you did.
I don't understand the question. I just
stop playing lower than your intelligence level. Ice, answer the question. Stop it.
Hey, I just
you could not, you could not like the question, but you're playing lower than your intelligence level.
And that's
what annoys me.
I just Keenan's disgust throughout his entire answer. That's what if y'all ain't watching the YouTube, if you ain't already here for Rob's background, ridiculous. Come for Keenan's disgust throughout Brennan's entire 100% answer.
Agree that was worth it. 1000%.
Because also too, Brennan answered the question wrong, right? And which I took full effort for saying, hey, my bad, I might have worded it in a way to where it's wrong. I don't know if they got it that way. Maybe they answered, maybe they got it correct. Did you guys understand it or no?
I did, yes.
I'm there now.
Yeah. I get, okay. So if you're listening,
I'll take the miscommunication.
Oh, I get where Brendan's coming from. And I felt like Brendan could have answered that question. Like he knows he could have answered it, but he was like, should I answer it or should I be a dick? I'm going
to
be
a
dick.
I wasn't trying to be a dick. That was my honest answer. I'm not saying fuck Keenan. I'm saying fuck the question.
Like, that's all fair, Ice. He knew he could have answered the question. This question that we've all asked, I'm like, all right, whatever. But I'm going to find an answer because that's the way we move the podcast. But go ahead.
I mean, it depends on what the definition of is. I mean, I don't.
Oh shit. I'm done. Big army. I'm good. That's
yeah. The end of mine. Yeah, similarly, I'll keep it short. I'll go small army, especially if I was Tekadon. I probably would have been satisfied with what I had after season one. I had a nice little farm, nice little orphanage, got my nice little piece of pie.
Oh, shit.
I don't know.
I'm not trying to beat this big-ass army and the motherfuckers just start like, all right, we got to invade Mars and take this shit over. I don't even want that smoke, man. It's too much.
I get you.
Next question. Have you ever walked away from a job slash opportunity that people told you that you were crazy to leave? So if you ever had a job that you were just like, bro, you're sick as hell if you leave this job because all the opportunities you might get, whatever the case may be. Brennan.
Obviously, this is paying homage to Takaki and what he did. And so I asked this question because I've done it. You know, like I had a really good job working at Walgreens. I had every advantage in front of me. You know, I went through their whole internship management process. I was on the fast track to success. By now, I probably would have been a district manager or more, making six figures for the past probably 5 or 6 years now. I would have way more wealth accumulated in my life than I do at this moment. But I also would have hated myself. I'd probably be fat and in an unhappy marriage. That's probably what would have happened. And for me, I had to make a choice. It's like, I knew what the trajectory of my life was if I would have stayed working for them. I was like, I know exactly what's going to happen. I can see it. They have showed it to me. Yeah. And I've lived in it because I was working there for a couple of years. I mean, I know exactly what my life is going to be like for the most part. 70% of my life, I know exactly what it's going to be. And there's a little 30% that I can make my choices on. But all those choices are dependent on that 70%, which I already know what it's going to be. And I chose to take the other pill and say, nah, I don't know what's going to happen. And I prefer that because I think that there's something greater out there, hopefully. And so I left all that opportunity and I just left it. And I just was like, let me just figure something else out. So that was my opportunity that I passed up on. And people told me I was crazy.
You said you would have more money now from working at Walgreens than you have now?
At this moment in my life, I 100% would have had more money than I have right now. Easily.
I mean, not that I know Brennan's pockets, but if you think of big corporations and their hierarchy, the bags that they be giving out at that level
I'm looking at your company. I feel like
especially with lower cost of living.
Yeah. Well, that lower cost of living, but also consistent income, Keenan, is that like I started a company and I sunk all my savings into it. And I also didn't pay myself for years or paid myself just my minimum, like I can survive wage for literal years when I would have been on the other side of it, making a consistent income that increased every year. You know, so at this current moment, I would probably already own property. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would have a bunch of like assets and probably a family. Whereas now I'm like, okay, cool. I might end up having more money at some point than I would have had. But you sitting would. Here today, I would have had way more money today than I would have, than I do currently.
And you, but you would have been sitting on all that real estate with transit pictures in the back of your mind, just eating.
As yeah, I didn't even move here thinking about transit pictures or production. I'm just saying, like, the entrepreneurship, I agree, 100%. Yeah. Entrepreneurship would have eaten at me in the back of my mind.
Right.
Yeah, no, I've definitely had opportunities come up, or like I've been in situations where it was like, I know I just got to show up. I just got to do this and they will pay me money. And I just looked around and I was like, this isn't it. Like, I don't want to do this. And I walked away because I knew that fit wasn't right for me. And yeah, I mean, even there was at one point, like we were just starting production on like Reinventing Power, and I was working another job, and they were like, we're going to pay you like all this money to like help out with this casting job. And I was fucking hating it. And I was like, man, Brennan's telling me about this producer stuff. I'm just going to do that. That sounds way better than this. Like, I remember it was a day I was running like a casting call. And just throughout the day, I was just like, this is not for me. And I just remember I called my supervisor aside, and I was just like, hey, you know, I'm sorry, I can't do this anymore. Like, I'll work out like the rest of the week. You need me to finish out the month. That's cool. But like, we need to figure out something for me to be replaced. And I remember she said something like, oh, I wanted to give you all that money. And I was like, yeah, me too. But like, I can't, I'm not going to take it. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do this. And that was it.
It'd be funny if he ended, by the way, Brennan, I quit. I'm like, oh, fuck, damn.
I'm out. Bye, Brennan.
He's been talking about you this entire time.
That would be funny. No.
That would not be funny. I would be devastated.
At all.
Yeah.
Very important. Yeah,
this is crazy because that's where I'm at in my life right now. I worked, I guess, for a big company. That I'll leave unnamed, but I work for a pretty big company. And like very recently, I retired and I bought my own company with the money that I've been making. So I just looked at it as I knew that I wanted something bigger. And I always knew that, like, so where I work for, on a daily basis, their goals for money is astronomical, six figures almost every day. And I looked at that in comparison to how much I was making, and it wasn't nowhere near that. So I'm just like, okay, I can stay here and make a good living, but I'll never be the owner of this company. I'll never be be my name on it. So I just took, I took a leap of faith and, bought a company, which when they make money, I'll make money. And I can, whatever the goal is for the day, that will be in my pocket. So yeah, I definitely did that. And it gave me more time. It's given me more time and autonomy to do what I really want to do, which is, comedy and films and all of that. And because, I'm going 60, 70 hours a week, making somebody else money and impeding on my dreams. Goals. I can't keep doing that. So yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Shout out to Ice for starting his own company and not taking the check.
Yeah.
No pun intended. All right, we'll go.
He's
with
so
us.
Stupid.
I hate that. That was funny. I give that to you, Keenan. I hate it, but I loved it at the same time.
Yeah, we'll probably get it, but we get it. Mine is, I guess, is similar to like Brennan and Ice in the sense where I'll say the company that I work for too, because like Brennan said, I worked for Home Depot for years, for a very long time. I had a lot of opportunities to move up, and I didn't want to move up because I felt like if I would have moved up, I would have got locked in. To not being able to fulfill my dream. And then at one point I thought I was, I said, fuck, I'm going to start making some moves, but I needed some time. I needed to take a leave of absence, for stress. And I went up to my manager and I asked him, and this is a manager that's only been there for like 6 months. And I've been there for like almost 10 years at the time. And I was like, hey man, I just want to let you know, I just probably need like a leave of absence for like just a week or something like that, man. I've been stressing out. I've been having me do three people's jobs. And he was like, what do you even do here? Like, you need time off? Well, what work do you do? I said, who the fuck you talking to? Literally. I said, who the fuck you talking to, bro? Like, you barely got here. What the fuck you talking about? And we're in the middle of hardware going back and forth. middle of the hardware section. And then I already had a lot of people tell me, not people, everybody there said, stay there. Everybody that was doing comedy would have said, fuck Home Depot. And yeah. I didn't go there to quit that day. I went there to literally, because I didn't want to quit. So after, I won't get into the whole long exchange, but after that exchange, I went to the HR office and I talked to the lady. She loved me. And she was just like, I told her what happened. And she's like, well, Kenan, you know, this is a great company. I think you need to stay here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just move you to another location because you're too valuable of an asset. And then right there, I made a decision. I said, fuck him, fuck this company. And he can, I said, he eat a dick. And I said, just cast my shit out.
Cash me out.
And she's just like, this is what I do for you. I don't want you to get cashed out yet. Keep your, put your 2 weeks in. And just, if you don't want to show up, just don't fucking show up. But she's just like, put your 2 weeks in just in case you ever. But she was just like, I still feel like you need to come back to this job. And she still hits me today on Instagram. Hey. Ain't happening. But I was scared, man. I didn't have nothing. I had nothing in my life. I had no money. And I took that leap. And then literally after that, comedy just started falling in my lap. So you go for your dream. It happens. This is the last question. And we can make this one short and fun. So Pop doesn't stink anymore. He don't smell. Fuck y'all for saying I was out here stinking when I was talking to you.
Ain't no y'all.
Keenan was like, we're doing this question.
Yeah, right. God damn it. I got defensive. I'll say it, motherfuckers. I got defensive at the shots today. But have you ever dated a woman that made you change something about yourself or made you step it up in any aspect of your life? Not necessarily cleanliness, but I'll say for me, I wasn't out here musty. But for me, I guess I'm regular guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, my girl's a germaphobe. So and that aspect, I had to step it up. Like, I would come home, be tired, lay in my bed in my work clothes if I was out working too late. She's not having it. And I remember I had to step those type of games up in that sense, you know, because she'd be like, bro, you're not just about to be out here just all over me, nigga. You smell like concrete. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I definitely set my game up and, you know, I guess, and technically in the cleanliness department. And I have other ones too, but I'm keeping it short. Rob?
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of relationships, especially the best ones, like your partner makes you a better version of you, right? But like I've definitely been in situations where I had somebody trying to make me into somebody I wasn't, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so like, I would say that's true in my relationship now. Like, you know, my relationship now makes me want to be a better version of me and be like you said, like, be cleaner, be nicer, like think about other people. But like I remember in like high school, I had a situation where there was this girl that was just like, we're going to Aeropostale and we are getting you a whole new like wardrobe. We're getting you a whole new outfit. And I like walked out of there with some shit that I don't think I wore ever again. Cause I was just like, this just wasn't, I was like, this just, it's not me. So that didn't work out. And so now I'm here and much better for it.
Oh yeah, for sure. For me, it's more like on the emotional and self-awareness tip. Just learning a lot about myself. You know, I think a relationship in a lot of ways can be a mirror to yourself. And the way that you act towards the relationship and not necessarily the person could be a mirror of how you act and feel about yourself. And so like I learned a lot about the way I perceive myself and the way I perceive everything in my very recent relationship, actually. And I'm really grateful for that. It's a lot of emotional maturity. It also, yes, definitely like the cleanliness and learning a little bit more about how to run a kitchen and show, you know, stuff that I just never cared about. Like there's just so many things that you don't think to care about that a partner can bring to your life that you just never, wasn't part of your family culture and whatever. And then you start living with somebody, then it's like, oh, I have to bring their whole culture of what they do in their household into mine. And it's a give and a take. Like you're like, yo, I don't get down with that. And they're like, well, I don't get down with that. You know, he's like, oh, wow. Okay. Well, let's meet in the middle. Yeah. So it's a whole thing.
Nice.
Yeah. I think I'll stay away from the emotional part because I'll get a little too deep. So just from a physical standpoint, I was with a girl once, a young lady once, and she was just like, you know, I get patches on the side of my face. And she like, cut that shit. Like shave your face. Let your face look like nice and stuff. Get that bullshit off your face and, you know, just try it. If you don't like it, you can go back to, you know, patch life. And then I tried it. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I like it. I look all right. And then I think one of the biggest ones is too, is like I wear a lot of sneakers. I wear a lot of sneakers and it's like sweats and like I wear active wear. Like I ran track, so I dress like that. And she's like, we can't get into fancy clubs with you dressed like this. Like they have dress codes. You can't wear fucking Jordans here. Like do you own a pair of dress shoes? And I was like, nah, I don't. At the time I didn't. And then she was like, we're going to get you some fucking dress shoes. Do you have a button up? I'm like, just like a one for like interviews or shit. She's like, no, you need a decent button up. I remember going to fucking Express or like Zara or some shit and was just like, you need stuff till you can go in fancy places. You cannot wear sweats and tennis shoes everywhere. And I'm like, all right, cool. And now I have a, you know, mixed wardrobe because of that.
I'm laughing at Ike because I've somewhat been there in a sense where I hate suits, but it was just like, you need a suit. I was like, oh.
I was laughing because Ice was talking about his relationship with women and then the world behind him was falling apart. I was just like, I was done, wow. Y'all. That's why I was laughing so hard. He was just like, and about this young woman. And it's like an earthquake starting. The pictures are falling. He's trying to hold shit up. Like, no, it was cool, guys. It was cool.
Dog. I'm fucking, are you like,
who is this guy? Get this guy, bro. He's on fire, dog.
He's just on fire. He's coming for people.
I've been missing it. I wasn't. What the fuck, Brendan? We were good. We were good, bro.
Y'all were good. I was literally. Our relationship turned into you and Ice. And you and Ice were being you,
bro.
That was hilarious.
What the fuck happened?
I'm just speaking my truth, y'all. That's
happened?
It. It's no, hey, there's no personal, no personal beefs here. If Rob would have done this, no, it wouldn't work for Rob. Yeah. That was only for you, Ice. But it's not personal. It was just for me.
God,
I found it funny.
Damn.
That was funny. You saw Rob and Keenan both laughed their asses off when I said that. Like, it was funny, and I couldn't hold that in. I'm sorry.
Because when he started laughing, I knew he wasn't laughing at shit I had to say. It had nothing to do with what I had to say.
Indirectly. No. It had everything to do with what you were saying.
Bro. Oh, my God. Listen to the podcast, watch the podcast, just because Brendan was on fire today. I got nothing, man. That's the end of the questions. Just to our dudes and don'ts, we can kind of, I mean, I know we're going to probably have a little extension for Brendan because this is his pick. But we can keep it short. I'll go first. Brendan's still laughing.
Yo, the way he reached back was so funny to me.
He
was trying to act like he wasn't reaching back to preserve his way of life kind of shit. He's just like, he's literally just struggling back here. Like, I'm like, out of all the moments of struggle, when you talk about your relationship with women, really, this is it? Like, I'm sorry. I'm done.
Appreciate you, Rob. I appreciate
you, man. Rob is dying laughing right now. Dying laughing right now.
Rob's holding it in, though. He's kind of like, just like,
Thank you so much, Rob. You're a gentleman.
When I saw Brennan laughing, I was just like, some bullshit's coming, man. Like,
I almost didn't say anything.
Okay, so I'll make mine as quick as I can. For me, the thing I didn't like about this episode, I think we all said we agree with, just better for you, man. Just not having it. I don't give a fuck how you cut it and slice it in the real world or in fucking cartoons. Not fucking with it.
Nope.
The best part, damn, man, this show is just an emotional roller coaster. I 100% now understand what everybody was just like, yo, you're going to get emotional. And I'm not there yet. But I know it's fucking coming. Like, even watching Ashton kind of get impaled, because they're not just showing people just die, like the Gundam blows up, and then there's like, oh, so-and-so died. This motherfucker's in there impaled with glass in his body, giving his last words. That shit fucking sucked, bro.
Bloody eye.
Yeah.
Bloody eye. Tough. That shit sucked to watch. And I was just like, man, this shit is definitely bringing me to an emotional place to where I don't think it's going to fall into my top five. But if it's ending the way I think it's going to probably end, it can possibly crack into my top 10, top 15. Top 15 for sure, probably top 10. Because this shit is just like, if you can give me some decent action and pull my heartstrings a little bit, make your boy's eyes water a little bit. you get me in a different space. So I can go deeper. I have a lot more other points, but I don't want to take that much time. We've been rolling for a little bit here. I'm going to give this a 7,400. Rob?
Yeah, no, same favorite or least favorite part. That really was, that was a bummer. Favorite part was actually the fight between Galen and Akihiro. Like, that whole time I was just like, get him. And like that whole line about just like, congratulations, turns out you're the decent one. I was like, fuck.
So
yes.
Many fucking lines in here that were dope and hard.
I was all on board. I was on board for that. Like Brennan said, I texted him.
Akihiro is the fucking man, is what he texted.
He's the fucking man. That dude is not messing around. So yeah, that's my favorite part. Overall, I'm really liking the show for a lot of the reasons, you know, Keenan mentioned, it's also just like, you know, it kind of hits me in a personal spot, just is the fact that, you know, working with all you guys, working with Brennan in a small company, and then just like seeing that grow, there's a lot of relatability towards my life and what's kind of happening in the show, and just like the challenges you encounter with like growing a small operation like that. Like, obviously it's not the same. We're not fighting in like giant robot fights, but there's dynamics that are similar. And so I can relate a lot to that. So I'm enjoying the show quite a bit. I think I was at 7,000 last time. I'm going to go 7,300.
Nice.
I knew it. You keep that same energy.
First of all, my least favorite moment is 5 minutes ago. Fuck Brennan. No, it's the pedophilia. Like, I fucking hated it.
Yeah.
Also, too, I didn't really like watch. I don't understand why Chad is getting a hard on about Homeboy and Mr. Tebbit, whatever. Remember, like, I don't know why it's such a big deal for him. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe
because he liked her, obviously.
I didn't remember that.
Yeah, I don't
know. I was like, I got it from context clues, but I was like, is that a thing?
He liked her. Like, that's what I'm saying. He obviously liked her and was like, yo, when I get a chance, I'm going to get at her. And then nobody even told him. Nobody even told him she got with somebody.
I thought she was feeling Orga at one point.
Yeah, I think she was.
Same. I don't think she always looked at him as like a kid to me. Like, I never even saw anything happen.
She wanted a real man. Favorite part, to Brennan's point earlier, which gave it even more context, really thinking about it once he said it, is the Taki shooting him. But I think more so even the fact that they gave him that trust. And trust is such a big thing, and that goes such a long way. And there's many forms of it. And I feel like that's damn near the greatest form of it. So that was really cool to see. Those first two episodes, I was like, fuck yeah, let's do this. Like, I'm here. Because I was like, let me see what the next five episodes like, because I wasn't super sold. Those first two episodes, I'm like, let's fucking go. But then those last three, it just went back to a soap opera, and I was like, fuck me, bro. Like I was just frustrated on where it went, and I was trying to, as much as I could, hold on to those first two episodes and as much as I enjoyed it. But that, the last 5 minutes of the fifth episode kind of brought me back in, and I still want to watch it. I still like the show, but I don't know. It's not, I think it's telegraphing too much of the people that's going to lose. Like, I knew either Aston or Taki was going to die. Like, they telegraphed the fuck out that shit. And I was like, why do we do that? But for them to, but kudos to them, because they telegraphed it, but they still made you feel that shit. Like, they still made you feel that moment. There's like, no, he's just not going to, his Gundam's not just going to blow up. Like, he's going to feel shit. You're going to have this conversation. Okay, you got me. But I don't know. I'm not there with you guys with it. So overall, I'm gonna give it a 5,500.
Whew.
That's why. I mean, I personally put Ice before Brennan because I saw his faith and I was giving mine 7,400. I was like, oh yeah. So let's see. That's what Ice would say. Defend that pick. Brennan, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the show. I think Rob and Keenan hit the points that I really would. Like, my least favorite, obviously, same as you guys, the child shit. And I also almost agree with Ice on his least favorite part about, like, I actually kind of found that part funny. That he was just like, what the fuck? Y'all motherfuckers can't tell me the hot shit that's going on in our shit? I thought that was funny. And I also actually really enjoyed, like, the big muscly guy giving, like, super good advice to, you know, the kid that's under Mika. And he's just like, yo, by the way, like, that's a sign of a good pilot. You know, it's like self-awareness and awareness. It's like, yo, just great advice from the guy who never speaks. And he's like, you just talk? Like, I like that moment a lot. My favorite moment overall, though, is definitely the same as Isis, is the sense of like, yo, just the trust of the team in that moment and what that means to everybody is huge to me. And I already spoke to it, so I don't have to. Super excited that I love that. One of my favorite things about this show is that you don't know who or what the antagonist really is until you know. You know what I'm saying? And so now a new one just was identified. We thought we knew who the antagonist of the show was, but now there could be a new one. What happens next? How does it happen? What does this change about all the dynamics that we're hearing? Because they built up this thing pretty heavily. You know, they said an entire war that changed the entire existence of how government's power and resources have been allocated. Years, 300 years ago, changed the entire universe because of this thing. And y'all motherfuckers just woke it up. You know what I'm saying? Like, it wasn't even a character and even thoughts. It was just some background mention. We were like, oh, there's going to be another cool Gundam. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Somebody else is going to kick ass. And they were just like, no, it's not even that.
Yeah.
It's not even like that. Nobody gains a power. Like, there is a power that is to take everybody else's. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty fucking dope. So either way, I'm keeping the same energy. I'm going to keep it at about, you know, I'm going to call it 7,500. Good times, like just good energy, good shit. And I think you guys are going to learn why I really thought we should watch season two pretty soon.
Yeah, I think a lot of people agree with you. A lot of people were saying this is one of the, I feel like this and Yu Yu Hakusho was the most requested season two show to watch.
Yep.
At least the people that hit me up. So
it was a hard choice because there's a lot of other anime I want to introduce you guys to. But I felt it was really important to finish this one out. And I hopefully you'll understand.
Is it done
why.
After this? There's no season three?
I won't speak to that.
Okay. Ice, drop yourself.
Ice Dot McGowan on everything.
Rob.
Yeah, RV Danger on Instagram, RV Danger 44 on Twitter.
Brennan.
At Brennan the Best on the gram.
Keenan Baker on everything. Anime Shun Podcast, SHUN Podcast on every single thing. Hit that Cash App, show us some love. We're going to have some good stuff coming for y'all. I promise. I know I keep saying that shit. We are working behind the scenes on some shit. And I can't wait for y'all to even see the new podcast studio. It's, you know, if you follow Brennan, you've probably already seen it. It looks fire. So can't wait for y'all to see that. Thank you for tuning in every week to another episode.
Hold on. Wait, one thing.
Yo, that was the quickest.
He was ready.
He was ready. Take their headphones off because he knew what was coming. You don't say real quick, Ice. You just go into that bitch, bro. Because you would have got him. You didn't say real quick. That's it off.
Some days it's just their day. This is Brennan's day. He's
shit.
Just.
This is
Brennan was on fire
man.
All day. Brennan was on his P's and Q's.
He can't
all
miss.
Fucking day
he
today,
was
man.
It. Yeah, I fucked up, man. You know, the greatest. Hey, man, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. This, regardless. This is still the greatest fucking anime podcast in the entire world.
All right, John, y'all heard it here. Y'all know what it is in these streets. We out here. Thank you for tuning in every week to another episode of Animation. We out.
Ah, shit.
And so anime was solved forever.